Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Starting to get
nothing
in the class. I need to have one of these.
Yeah, right. I get your whole library set up there. It is nice to be in this room, though, to be able to grab those.
Yeah.
Hey, the first thing I want to do is ask if there's any questions about the quiz next Tuesday and for review. Basically, it's just lessons 37 to 30 to 40, and I can tell you what you'll be responsible for grammar-wise. And I mentioned to you on the NIFAL, 37, 38, 39 are dealing with NIFAL. And the only thing you'll need to know really for the test is on page 178 and 179, there's a paradigm for katav as your regular verb. So if you just mark that first column, katav, which starts niktav, 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 etc., that whole column there, all the way down, including the participles and infinite absolutes and so forth, that's what you'll be responsible for as far as the nifal is concerned. That and the four categories of meaning that the nifal can have. So you should be familiar with those four. At page 175 and 176, 177, there lists four categories. The incomplete passive, the middle, the reflexive, and the resultative. So that's all you really need to know. Yes?
We skipped one lesson. We didn't do the reading. Is that 40?
Yeah. I can't remember which one it was, but you won't be responsible for that. Only the readings that we covered in class. And let's see, which one was it? Was it 40?
Yeah, 40 was good. No, we didn't.
We did, yeah, I think we did 40. It was one of them where there was a psalm. We did the psalm one, but we didn't do the other one.
39.
Yeah, 39 we didn't do it. 39, but we just did the psalm one. So you'll be responsible for that psalm 121, but not the other one. Okay. So for lesson 37, you need to know those four categories of nifal meaning, and then the paradigm for katav and the nifal. Okay, and then, other than that, lesson 38 and 39, grammar-wise, you don't need to worry about. They're just complications with PL. So there's nothing in that, grammar-wise. It'd be just the readings at the end, the ones we did cover. And then in lesson 40, for the PL, you have be responsible for the four basic types of meaning for that, factitive or transitivizing, denominative, intensive, and unclassified. And then the paradigm, Giddale, this first column, bottom page 195 and page 196, the first column, Giddale, will be responsible for that paradigm all the way down, and that analogous to the Nifal one you had. So if you're familiar with those, you'll be in good shape. So I don't know if we need to review, it's just a matter of that's it. Unless there's any questions.
Can I ask you a Hebrew question off the subject?
Yeah, go ahead.
So it comes up this year as an apologetic and Leviticus 12.
Uh-huh.
Question is, could Shakad in some way mean the united one?
Uh-huh.
And what's your opinion on that?
I say categorically no. The Hebrew word doesn't mean the united one, but the Hebrew word may be used in a context that means the united one. See the difference? In other words, the word echad means one and only one, and that's the word for one, it's the number one, and so forth. But if you've got a verse that says the two shall be made one flesh, for example, well, sure, the whole context is talking about two, and they're being made one in one in a sense. But the word one has still got its pure sense of one. The united is only coming from the whole context, because you know you're talking about several things that have one in one sense. So then you glean a united one from that. But the word echad just only means one. I've never seen any justification for anything else on that.
So you could say in certain situations with certain helping words
right.
And a context, it could be united one.
Right. Right, exactly.
So but the one that is speaking about, the thing that is one may be composed of more than...
Right, that's the point.
And
that's
so
the
it's
point.
Not a united one in that sense, uh-huh. It's still referring to that one.
Exactly.
Which in and of itself, or intrinsically, yeah. May be more than one.
Yeah, if you want to say it this way, I would say the word echad, even in that context, just means one. But the meaning of the whole phrase may be a concept of a united one.
Like the people were one.
Yeah, the people were one, something like that. It's the whole verse that means united one. It's not the word echad.
Okay.
The funny thing is that Yahid comes from a root which means to gather together or to unite.
Yeah, one. It does. And that's the one they say is an absolute one. Yeah. So I'm real dogmatic about that just because I've done a lot of study on it. And
we had about a half hour discussion on that in solid.
Did you?
And the language was insisting that it only meant one. But I was thinking, well, in some sense it could mean.
Yeah, okay. Okay. But that's the sense, you know, I think that's the distinction we need to make between the word itself and the word plus context. And so I think it's really your context that's giving you a United One concept in some of those passages. And I wouldn't argue with that concept in some of those passages, but for the word one, see, just because echad's the only word they got for one. It's just like English. You see, we have the word O-N-E, and we don't look it up in a dictionary and say it means United One. It means one. But we may say the two should be one, and our word one hasn't changed its meaning. It just means that the whole context and so forth. It's just exactly the same. In other words, the word one in English, the word one in mia or hen and so forth in Greek, whatever is masculine, feminine, neuter, hes, mia, or hen, and the word one in Hebrew, echad, they're all equivalents. In other words, you're counting, a little Hebrew child goes one, two, three, echad, and this is what he starts off with. And so it's just a matter of, and that's the distinction that's important to make, because see what the Trinitarian will do is what he'll do is he'll go in Genesis 2 and say the two shall be one flesh, therefore echad means united one. Then he plugs united one back into Deuteronomy 6:4 when it says God is one. And so he is what he's doing is plugging his contextual meaning from 2:23 into Deuteronomy 6:4. Not the meaning of the word echad. The word echad hasn't changed its meaning in either one of those verses. It means an absolute one in both verses. But the context of the other shows that two are being made an absolute one in the sense that there's a certain sense in which the thing that they're becoming is an absolute one, but it's composed of different parts. And that's what gives you the fact that it's united. It's one, but it was once two, and therefore it's changed its state. And it's being conceived of, or it's being thought of, or it's functioning together as one unit, or something like that. But the sense in which it's one, it's an absolute one. It's hard to say much more than that. Okay. We'll have to write a thesis on that or something, or paper on it. I did write a letter on that I've saved a copy of. Don wanted me to write to somebody a theological point on that. But it's a point that's going to come up all the time out here in the future. I'm always amazed at it. Yes?
When studying lessons 38 and 39, what should we emphasize?
Okay, 38 and 39, the only thing you really need to do as far as review, I'll just make it simple for you, is the readings that we did at the end. In other words, any verbs, see, these are dealing with the oddball verbs. I'm not going to ask you for any paradigms of three A's or one nuns or anything like that. So the only thing you really need to do is be sure that you're familiar with the readings that we did at the end of those chapters. On lesson 38, I think we did both part C and that Psalm 24, 7 to 10 reading. And then in lesson 39, we didn't do that part C, but we did the part D, the Psalm 121. So that's what I would spend my time. Just if you're familiar with all the verb forms and everything in that, that's all you really need to know. But grammar-wise, don't worry about it, because it's just the unusual forms. And then lesson 40, there you'll have the four basic meanings of the PL, and then the paradigm for PL, plus the reading at the end. Okay, any other questions? All right. Then, I'll try to make that reading section, the translation section, a little bit shorter to correspond, you know, with the amount of grammar questions I give you. In other words, I still want to be able to get you done in an hour. And I can't remember how it came out last time on that translation test. It seemed like everybody finished within the hour. But the number of, you know, I don't think everybody, you know, I think it took longer than a half hour. So it's like between a half an hour and an hour. Okay. We can go ahead and finish these exercises now in lesson 42. And then we'll be into the hip field in 43. And we've done number part C here, verse 23. I think we've gotten down to verse 2. I think we're just two verse 2. We went through verse 1 here of this next chapter. It goes from chapter 220, Exodus 2:23 to 3:6. So my marker indicates somebody had done verse 1. And who was up next? It seemed like Peter was. Okay, verse 2. Why don't you go ahead and take that?
And the angel of Yahweh, this is the bird to see.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned appeared yesterday, which makes sense. But
yeah. It's is it a Niphal? I think it might be a Niphal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, it's a Niphal form from Yara, and so it'll give you the passive idea. So it'd be type to be seen. But that's where we get appeared. The angel of Yahweh was seen of him, and was seen to him or appeared to him.
And that, I thought it would have a
stereo
on the second for a
Niphal
on the
ridge. So
this is a
ridge. Yeah. Well, let's see, Niphal is from Yahra. It just gets a quiescent aleph. Now, the imperfect, see, it's a Niphal imperfect. So we might want to double check on that. This is a one yod.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah, I looked at it. I figured out what it was, but I didn't make it.
And it's also a law consecutive form, which might have shortened it up, too.
Yeah, that's the only thing I could figure out for sure.
Okay. I'm sure that's the case.
Really. He doesn't go. All he says for one yod is, for 3 days. He just says they're normal, I think.
It's a one yod and a three aleph. So you have to combine both features.
It's
oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry.
Three.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking of the other verb there now. All right. That's yeah. It's a three hay. And three hays tend to get, you know, shortened and funny things happening to them. Period. So
okay.
We've got Yevaneh. And then this would be a well consecutive form, apocopated form, in addition to that. So it's not just your normal imperfect form. And he doesn't give, he doesn't list those forms there. That's part of your problem.
Where does the seri come from the well consecutive? Any seri's anywhere listed on
Benin. Yes. There is, on a one aleph, on a one guttural, they have one ye aseh, mixed types here on section 144.
Yeah.
And that may be where what we're looking at, something similar to that. Then, see, if you do that, you got your imperfect form with that, and then because of the impossibility of doubling, see, what's happened is this is a one resh, and remember in the Niphal, you want to try to... in the imperfect, the nun gets assimilated, and so it's going to double that first radical.
Right.
But since resh can't take the dagesh, it acts like a guttural. And so that would give you the compensatory lengthening to the seri.
Okay.
So the only thing left we have to worry about is the fact that the hay is gone at the end, this gold hay, and that's probably because of the well consecutive form, the apocopated form.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Right. So everybody got to... Sometimes it takes a... you've got to do a private eye investigation to figure out why that's the case, but...
But the only, I don't know, page 144 is talking about the apocryphated form, not an adjusted in this case, but it does give a Yevret for Ra'ah.
It does give that?
Yevret, but it doesn't have a comment to the on the ridge.
Right.
So that would make
so what we, I think what, that's probably coming from... That's coming, you know, so what we really have to do is combine what we see there and with the knowledge of the fact that it's Niphal.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there was another thing in here where it talked about Niphal with Ra'ah and it talked about it being in the Niphal, it being to appear.
Yes. Okay.
That was,
They didn't give any. Didn't give you any paradigm for it, though,
no,
did they?
No, they just gave us the first.
Yeah.
Or they gave your.
Yeah, this one you probably wouldn't be able to find it easily in the back either, because it's NIFL. So.
Page 177. It just tells you that it's BC of
work. Okay.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah, but that won't help you in the.
No, but at least you can understand what the.
Sure.
Is.
Okay.
Yeah, you know it could be a call for
him. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. That's about the only thing you can do with it. Then if you want to cheat, you can just look it up in the analytical.
I guess you could, in a sense, you know that it couldn't be ERA because it's taking a direct object, and ERA is intransitive.
Well, let's see.
Well, I mean...
Appeared would still be intransitive. Angel of Yahweh appeared Elau. That would kind of be a tip off too, that it was, you know, it kind of works in the other way. In other words, you can tell this thing is
Elau appeared toward him. I don't know, that would be kind of weird.
Yeah, that would be a little bit different. Yeah, fear would be. But you will find that those two verbs are very often confused, and to appear and to see and to fear, all three of those. I'm saying this from experience. Talking about real practical confusion, not just theoretical confusion. Okay. In practice. Okay. Experiential, not legal confusion. Okay. New concept here. Okay.
Okay. And the angel of Yahweh appeared, Moses saw it and was afraid. I'm joking.
Okay.
I'll read it. The angel of Yahweh appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. And he saw, and behold, the bush was made to burn in the fire, but the bush was not consumed.
Okay. The bush was made to burn, or... was burning is what I had there. The bush was burning. Behold the bush. It's just a participle. Yeah.
I looked.
Did you?
Oh, well.
Yeah, Boe. Yeah, it's just a old fashioned, Poel.
That's the way,
anyway,
I was kind of this is a Poel for Poel. And I realized that's just participle.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway.
Yeah, that takes you way back. It was the first verb form you learned way back in the beginning. So the bush was burning. Behold, the bush was burning with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And was not consumed there. To give you a note here, the regular passive adjective. It's probably from a passive participle or something, but it's been shortened down and modified, so that's why they call it a passive adjective.
That's that short form of
Lahala
to the construct.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I took a, it was like heart. Yes. I took a call as part of it, but I said the bush was not burning, not being burned, not being consumed. Is that too wild?
Or was not being, well, yeah, was not being consumed. That's not too bad. He's calling it a passive adjective, that's probably why. But if it's just a passive participle idea, it's probably what it's derived from. That wouldn't be a problem.
Something.
Yeah. Because the fact you already had the bush was burning, you had that progressive, and now it was not being consumed would be logical once you've established that. One more thing here that I wanted to point out. What was it? Oh, remember akal, to eat?
Yeah.
See, that's probably derived from the same verb, consumed. And bush wasn't being eaten up, you know, consumed. And the angel of Yahweh appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of the bush. And he saw, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, and the bush was not consumed. Okay, verse 3, Doug.
Moshe. Mm-hmm. Where, yeah, how are you? How did
be a little tricky too. Let's see.
And Moses said, okay, because I'm now on the other side of the door, so just let me turn down.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And see this through the doing why the bush has not burned.
Okay. Good. And Moses said, let me turn aside, and you might have stuck a now in there or something too, or let me turn aside, I pray, but usually it's not, you're not praying anybody there. So let me turn aside now, and I will see, because we start with another imperfect form there, and I will see this great a sight or appearance or whatever, why the bush is not burned or does not burn. What'd you put there, why the bush?
I can't remember what I did.
Yeah, it's actually an imperfect form, why the bush will not burn, or why the bush is not burning, maybe. And by that he means burning to consumption. Because it's obviously burning, but it's not burning, you know. So there's flames, but there's no consumption. So, yeah, this first form, though, as Asura, what kind of form is that? Anyway, Asurana. Yes.
Cohorted it.
Right. Notice that comma say on the end, and then your aleph on the front. And this is a cohorted form. That's from the fact that it's should be pu'al. Let's see. Did they give us anything on this? Or either that, or it's just shortened.
Yeah, it's just shortened.
Oh, that's the reason. Yeah. Some of them will get shortened up in the cohortative. And what's this verb from? It's just, is it just sar? Yeah. Dictionary form sar. So this would be a shortened form. You got to watch out because it looks, I think he stuck it in here because it looks like it might be pu'al.
Also, the shirt was reduced?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
the hollow verbs will do that with the shirek. Yeah, the hollow verbs, the shirek is going to shorten up. I don't know if I can't pinpoint where that was mentioned before, but
maybe it wasn't.
Maybe it wasn't. Yeah. Some of these, now that he's going to real text, there's probably going to be some things he misses too, as far as putting footnotes on. So we'll be doing a little bit more digging. But might as well get used to it. We're going to be doing a lot of this the rest of the year, digging for forms and so forth when we get into actual text. Okay. But see, lots of times when your eye just picks it up and you say, the comma say there, the aleph there, the na on it's got to be cohortative. You know, and then you just kind of go, okay. So the bottom line, and Moses said, let me turn aside now and I will see this great sight or appearance, why the bush will not burn or is not burning, something like that. Okay, number four then, verse four, Bryce.
Why the rock, Yahweh, king, star, the rope, why the Torah, Elau, Elohim, Netok, Hakaneth,
Hasanah. Yeah. Okay.
Why Yomer, Moshe, Why Yomer, Enneini.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
And Yahweh saw that he turned aside to look, and God called to him from within the bush, and he said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I.
Okay, good. So, and Yahweh saw that he turned aside to see, and God called to him from the midst of the bush, or from within the bush, and said, Moses, Moses, and he said, here I am, or behold me, literally, in any, behold me, here I am, you know. But it's a little bit more emphatic than, here I am, you know, here I am, you know. you get a lot more of emotional feeling from that, yes.
This is the verse before, in this section here. I translated it Edmonton applies to that.
Oh, yes, yes. Using starting with a cohortative and then continuing with an imperfect. Yeah, let me turn aside now and I will see. Yeah, you can almost, you can get that sense. Let me turn it aside now and I will see, but it's in the sense of so that I will see. And in English, that's, you know, we can probably get by translating it that way, but I think it's a good point. Just note so that, I'm going to put that in a note here too, so that I will see this great sight. Let me turn aside now so that I will see this great sight. Well, let me turn aside now in order to see this great sight, almost is the sense you're getting. Okay, good. That's that series starting with cohortative and continuing with imperfects. All right, any other question on number four here? Okay, number five, verse five, back to John here.
Vayomer al tikrav halom sav shav me'aleka me'al ragleka ki hamakom asher ata omed alau adma kodesh hu.
Okay.
Hither,
mm-hmm.
or to this place, that's what he was saying. So.
Mm-hmm.
And that shawl, remove.
Okay, it's imperative. Yeah.
Remove your sandals from off or from with your feet,
mm-hmm.
because
or from upon your feet, maybe. From you know, all is upon. It may all be from upon. So remove your sandals from upon your feet.
That's right. From upon your feet, because the place which you are standing upon it,
good.
This gets real interesting here. A ground of holiness, is it? It is, or
right.
It is a ground of holiness.
It is a ground of holiness. That's exactly what the literal is. It is a ground of holiness. Or, of course, they loosely translate it as holy ground. Okay? And the who, of course, is referring to the ground here, so.
Why that would be imperative,
mm-hmm.
but it's from Nashal, and so it's
a
one nun.
The one nun, yeah, that gets the nun chopped off for the imperative. Yeah. Okay, good. You looked it up because it's hard to tell when you see an imperative like that. It could have been a three hey or something like that too, and get shortened. Okay. Any other question? Verse six, then Tony. Do you want to take crack at it? Or do you want to pass?
Okay.
Okay. Here you go, Eric.
Avita, Elohei, Abraham, Elohei, Yitzhak, Elohei, Yaakov, Va Yatur, Yatater, Moshe, Anai, Ani, Anau, Ki Yarei, Havi, Havi, El, Ha Elohei.
Okay.
Very recent example.
Yeah. You learn about constructs in this one.
Yeah. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham.
Okay, it was just his father singular. Yeah, the God of your father singular. You got to watch those. Because remember, Avi, the form is Avi before the suffixes in the construct. Yeah, Avotaka or something like that if you wanted to plural, yeah. So Avika would be your father. I am the God of your father, okay? Yes, okay. Moses hid his face because he was afraid or he feared to look toward God, to look toward God or look at God, something like that. Okay.
We shouldn't explain why they're over there. I know we haven't necessarily covered it.
Okay. What you're looking at here is a hifil form. And the may here is going to be a prefix for your hifil. It's either participle or infinitive here. I'll have to take a look and see if we can get an infinitive out of that. It looks like it's an infinitive sense, but... yeah, it's a participle form with a name. So afraid to look. There's kind of an overlap in the function of participles and infinitives and constructions like this. But
it's an infinitive construct.
Okay, infinitive construct, that'll work. But they usually have hey, but let's see, let me check here. That's with the name, huh? Okay. Yeah, I've forgotten that. It looks like, normally hifils have a hey for the infinitive construct and a name for the participle. Prefix. That's the way all these are looking. Unless this is just an unusual one. Or sometimes using MAME, I can't find any example of that. But you looked it up with a MAME and they give you infinitive construct for it, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, verb, they have.
Oh, it's a different verb. Okay. There's the trick. It's from the verb mehav, okay. Or make.
Navat.
It's from navat?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking up navat now. Navat,
I have
to. Navat. Should be over to look at.
Hmm.
It says hifil is
hivit. Okay.
To look.
Yeah, that's all good, but the trouble is that the meme, we've still got a problem with the meme, because that's usually your participle prefix.
Let's see. Yeah.
If he's calling an infinitive construct, that's...
Abad.
That's a possibility. To look. In the towel. Hmm. Well, you may have to do some more looking on that one. If you saw the may as a, but usually you don't tack mays onto prepositions like that onto verb forms. But, you know, well, an infinitive construct though we might. Yeah.
Prefix may for. Name with a here and then like a dog H after. I don't know if it's trying to signify mean or what.
Hmm. Well, it must be unusual then, regardless of what we're looking at there. Well, we better not take too much more time with it.
That was good.
Obviously, there's a reason why I put the number 10 on here. But it looks, it should be a hifil form. It looks to me, just first glance, like a hifil participle. But apparently the analysis is more complicated than that. It's hifil for sure. Something's hifil in there. Hirik Yod is a good indicator of that.
That's someone's on the shoulder.
Okay. So what again do they say? Just let me take a look at it.
Okay.
coming from a verb, bo, apparently here, or something, you know, this bait, yo, bait, wow, palace. So it'd be a three guttural, and then it's going to feel. And we'll have to keep that one in mind. Looks like he's calling it as a prefix for it, though, and not calling it a preposition. And see, it mainly is a prefix for participle. But here he does it in a construct. He does that with several of these others, too.
Well, we'll just have to watch for unusual. When we go through the Hiphil, there's a lot of chapters on Hiphil, and there's a lot of complications with them. So it may resolve itself after we find an unusual one that goes ahead and does that. All the ones I can see don't have a name in the infinitive construct. They do have in the participle, all of them. So that's the thing that's puzzling me. And this is a hollow. Okay.
It's not fair having a hollow with a hiccup with a hiccup.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can get a hiccup anyway. Okay. The participle for a hollow does look like the right form. Makim, they give you there.
It's not a hollow, though. It's not a hollow. It's from Nava.
No, it looked there. You sure? They give it across there. He gave it as from base, wow, Aleph.
That's not what I just read. That's...
Okay, you better check it again. Base, wow, Aleph is what I remember seeing. We better resolve that.
No, that was the word of above from May Havi.
Was that? Oh, okay. You read the one above. That's okay. That's both. See, Nabat.
Nun,
Beit. Oh, okay. I was looking at that one. Yeah. Okay, from Nabat.
They tell you that's
going to
make it a lot more complicated. Now we got a one nun.
For the one nun, maybe that'll do it. We'll see. Yeah, Hiphil one nun. Okay. I'll find the right chapter. Okay. Hiphil one nun. Participle magiv. They give magiv for the participle for that particular form, so that would be close anyway. But that would still be participle. The infinitive absolute or infinitive construct. Infinitive construct begins with a hey. Okay, what it can be, what it looks like it is, it's a preposition main stuck onto the perfect, an infinitive construct with the hey there. The hey is coming from the infinitive construct, and then it put a preposition may on the front of that. That's the only thing I can figure out that it could be. But see, he seems to, now maybe he does mean that's the preposition, may from me, and that's probably what it is.
Is the back listing in your English glossary looks at it as
Yeah. Okay. I think that's what it is. The best I can figure up here is it's a Hiphil participle, I mean, Hiphil infinitive construct with a preposition min on it, which would be, the question is why a min would be there. You know, he feared from looking, you could be maybe translate, he feared from looking at God or something. You know, he feared from this, looking at God.
I don't give a conjugation thing back here for it.
Mm-hmm.
To look at.
Mm-hmm. See, it's almost got to be that, because if it was the participle, then the hey wouldn't be on it. It'd be a mame. But we've got a mame and then a hey. And I think that's what we have to do. And the Bates got a dagesh, so that's probably where the nun went. And you know, it was the one nun. And I think we found it. Okay. Okay. Any other questions there? Translation. And he said, I am the God of your father, God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. Okay. See, he never intended us to go this deep in this. He put the number on it and said, you know, you take my word for it. But I'm kind of glad we got a class that wants to go deeper than that, even though it takes some time sometimes. Okay, hit the old verbs of meaning. But this is the kind of training you need, you know. I mean, this is all part of our training. Is what we're trying to do is learn how to figure these things out. Although we did get a little ahead of ourselves on this one. Okay, lesson 43. We'll get into Hiphil and see what we can do with it.
Is that there? Is the argument in the arm on that?
Yeah, the Hurek Yod is normal for, that's just plain ordinary run-of-the-mill Hifil Hurek Yod. Hurek Yod is a, you know, see, that's the thing that got us confused. When I got the wrong verb on that, then I was thinking of a hollow verb. And hollows can get Hurek Yods too. But this Hurek Yod is from just a normal, regular, you know, from Navat. and that's an intrinsic part of the paradigm for these. So you'll see this, So you can tell from Hifil, you know, that the Hurek Yod comes, you know, on the second guttural, the second radical. Mm-hmm. From the tune of construct?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, maybe I was looking, I thought... Yeah. On page 213, is what I'm looking at, just the next page after we're on here. And you've got Hifil verb stems and inflection, section 158. Okay, you got your regular one in the first line, one nun in the second line. Okay, and you follow one nun across. See, from Nagad is what it was originally. So it's Higid in the perfect. And then, if you look down in the next column, infinitive construct is Hagid.
Oh, okay, on page 46, what we're looking at is one nun with three hay.
Oh, okay. That'll make it. See, it's the three hay that's causing you the problem on the Hurek Yod. Yeah, three hay can mess that up, but not the one nun. Okay. Well, you can see we're in for some fun here. All right, section 157, Hifil verbs. First, a little statement about the meaning, although he's going to go in more detail on that. And then we'll break it down into, I think, five categories for this one. And the last one's unclassified, of course. You always got to have that unclassified one in there. Hifil verbs are, for the most part, causatives of the corresponding call. Now, causative means it gives the sense of the verb of causing this action to occur. So if it was the... If the call was see, then the Hifil would be caused to see. That's the idea. The distinctive mark of this conjugational type is a prefixed hey. But because this is not present in the imperfect and in the participle, one must rely also upon vowel patterns to identify these forms and to distinguish them from the call. So when you get to the imperfect, they don't have the prefixed hey. But it's a real good identifier for your call forms to look for that prefixed hey. But it doesn't always occur. So the vowel pattern is something you have to watch. And the Hurek Yod is a pretty good indicator of that, except like three A's and some of the other complications that may not appear there either. The meanings that can be assigned to the Hifil may be grouped as follows. Okay, the first one is the causative. From roots whose call verbs are transitive, the causative may be doubly transitive. That is, with an object of the causing and an object of the verbal idea expressed by the root. Doubly transitive means you're going to have two direct objects, potentially. Not always going to occur with both of them, but those of you, the Greek students, are familiar with verbs that had double accusatives. And this is something analogous to that, although this is a far more general, more common thing. So look at this example here. Hishmia would be, he caused someone to hear. See, it's from shama to hear. And this is the Hifil form. And so this doesn't mean to hear, it means to cause to hear. To cause to hear. And so in the third person form would be, he caused someone to hear something. And it's not telling you who the someone or something is in that statement at all. It's just he caused to hear is all you've got. But then in a sentence structure, we have seen an example. Hishmia es ha'ish es ha'divrei ha'melech. He caused the man to hear the words of the king. Now notice we've got two F phrases here. So we've got Hishmia, he caused es ha'ish, the man. And so the man is a direct object of the verb caused, you know, the caused idea. And then to hear is to hear the words, eth ha-divrei ha-melech, to hear the words of the king. So we've got two verbal ideas almost here, the causing idea and the hearing idea. But it's all wrapped up in one verb in Hebrew, the Hifil form. So the Hifil means to cause, to hear. And then you can have two objects, the object of the causing and the object of the hearing. So he caused the man, that was the one he caused, the person that he caused, to hear the words. And that was the thing that he caused to be heard. So it's kind of an interesting construction. And they're doing it in one verb, but you see these two F phrases. Now, most of the time you don't see both F phrases, though. So here's more, it says, more commonly, however, there is only one object. If the second object is omitted, the verbal idea is intransitive. So if you omit the second object, In other words, the object of the root verbal idea. Then you get a kind of an intransitive idea. So Hishmiya Eth Ha'ish, he caused the man to hear. He caused the man to hear. So the in English analysis, in the English breakdown, we would analyze this as he, subject, caused, verb, and the man to hear as your as the direct object, the entire phrase there, and then to hear would be an infinitive idea, a complementary infinitive, you might say, to caused. But we have only one object now, and the idea of hearing is intransitive, doesn't have a direct object. So it is better to seek a more idiomatic translation value in English, one that contains the force of the causative but requires no further object. In other words, when we do that in English, we kind of are left dangling, cause the man to hear, and you're waiting for what? But if you use a different word, he informed the man, he notified the man, or he informed the man, then you've got subject, verb, object. You know, he informed the man. And that'll oftentimes happen. There'll be a different translation entirely for the hifil form of a verb. It won't be, they won't translate a cause to hear or something like that, but it'll be inform or something of that nature. So watch for those, and if you see something, in other words, if you what I would always recommend is if you're doing exegesis and you find that you're dealing with a hifil verb, and you look up the hifil verb in the lexicon and it says a certain thing, you might want to still not just stop there, but further ask yourself, what is this a hifil of? What was the call? What did the call mean? Did the call exist? And see if you can get a little bit more of an understanding as to what sense there is by looking at the breakdown of it. Okay. In other words, if you see just he informed the man, and you see informed for this verb, you may just stop there and say what word means informed, and not realize that it's the hifil form of a verb in the call, which means to hear, and it means to cause to hear, and that's the sense of informing, and that will maybe give you some more insight in a particular passage, for example. Okay, if the first is omitted, the verbal notion becomes passive in English. So if you take the first object out, then the whole thing becomes a passive idea in English. So if you say Hishmiya Eth HaDivarei HaMelech, you have he caused the words of the king to be heard, and you're not telling you who he caused to hear them, but he just caused the words to be heard. And so he caused to hear the words of the king, and he caused them to be heard to somebody, by somebody. And so we're translating it with a passive, caused them to be heard, even though the form is actually an active form. But and the causing is active. He's causing the words, but he's causing them to be heard, and you're not getting the object of that verb heard. Okay, so here again, a more suitable translation can usually be found. He announced or made public the words of the king. He announced the word of the king. In other words, he caused the words to be heard. So he announced the words. So we've picked another verb in English that kind of fits into the slot a little bit better, is what he's doing. A further example with Heira, to cause to see, and that's a three hey and a one, you know, two guttural and a one with a resh there, so it can have potentially lots of problems in form. So, and you can see here, this doesn't look like hifil, you know, Heira, that's quite a deviation. So we'll get into the reasons for that in the patterns form later. But Ka'asher Heira Ofaka Bahar, he showed you on the mountain, as he showed you on the mountain. Now here there's no second object involved. As he caused you to see, as it were. He caused you to see in the mountain or on the mountain. That's just a prepositional phrase. That's not an object of anything. And so you is the direct object of this, and they're translating he showed you because it's something that is applying to persons more. Now, if you have an object that applies more to things, the thing that's being shown, then you'll say, we've got here just a perfect imperfect form now. Yireh es kavodo, he will reveal his glory. Now they're translating reveal. I suppose you could still say he will show his glory, but now it's not show you because the you isn't a part of this. So he's going to show his glory, show forth his glory, something like that. It's not pinpointed to any particular person as the object of this showing, but it's revealing his glory. No first object in this one. Yes. You are in a way, yes. That's part of the reason why I think it's good to always try to analyze this from the hifil standpoint, because when you see in English, reveal is no different than any other verb. you know, in its form, and you don't get a connection of a causative idea. And so, and there are other words that could be translated reveal too. And so that's why, you know, I see why he's doing what he's doing, but it, because it's not a stilted, yeah, for translation value again. But if you're doing exegesis, yeah, I'm always looking from an exegesis standpoint. And from an exegesis standpoint, I would certainly want to know that it was a Hithiel form and know what the call was and kind of get a connection there. In other words, build it up from Hebrew idea rather than from English idea. And from the Hebrew idea, he's causing his glory to be seen. You know, he's causing to see his glory, is that in effect. And of course, we wouldn't translate, he caused to see his glory, because we, you know, that's awkward in English. But we might say he caused his glory to be seen and use that passive construction. That's better than this, I think, in, as far as literalism is concerned. And then, of course, that means revealing, to cause somebody to see. It means the idea of revealing. But it's not always quite the same, you know. Revealing has kind of the idea that it's been hidden and now it's unveiled. And that's loosely equivalent to causing somebody to see. But causing to see may be because the person was blind, you know, and not because the object was hidden. I mean, there's I think it's to reveal might inject a connotation that's not necessarily seen from the pure Hebrew, and that's why I think it's always wise to be careful.
It doesn't, the Hithiel tells you, in a sense, effect upon someone else, whereas when a translator like reveal,
uh-huh,
it says what occurred, but it doesn't say, you know, you can reveal yourself to somebody, but they may not.
They may not necessarily perceive it. Yeah.
Perceive it.
Yeah.
Whereas when you caused him to see,
mm-hmm,
then we know for a fact that he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that may be something worth checking out too, to see if they're using reserving Hithiel for that kind of a sense where there is an effect on the other person, or the, you know, the cause is being, received and affected. I'm not certain that we would always see that in every case. It may be said from the intent on the part of the person. He intended to cause him to see or something, but I suspect you're probably closer to right on that, just the way the forms are used, that something's happened, and he did cause him to see. And so that's worth considering anyway. I don't want to make a too dogmatic a statement on it, but it'd be worth considering. Now, it says, from roots whose call verbs are intransitive, Hithiel verbs are simply transitive. In other words, this is the same kind of thing we've seen with PLs and so forth, that you can take and transitivize a verb that's intransitive. And this is a very frequent use. To this group belong the extremely frequent causatives from verbs of motion. So if you've got a verb of motion already, you can intensify it in a little way or make it causative in this way. For example, avar meant to cross something, transverse across something, and then hevir means to bring across, or to take or lead or send across. In other words, you're causing somebody to cross something. You're taking somebody else, and you're causing them to do the action that the verb says, and so you're causing them to come across. Bring, lead, send, you know, various possibilities of that depending on the context. And then Yatzah means to go out, remember, to depart, go out. And so Hotzi would mean to bring out, to cause to go out, to take out, lead out, and so forth. Yarav means to descend, and so Horiv would be to bring down, or to cause to go down, to cause to descend. So, you know, we're out of time here, but you can see the connection in all of those. And the pictures are pretty clear there, I think. Okay, we'll have to stop here and pick up on that after our quiz next Tuesday. Next Tuesday, you can probably consider the whole hour taken for the test. And so next, no assignment for Wednesday on this, so yeah.